Welcome to Day Zero Update for October 27th, 2024. I'm your host, Chris Logie.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
And I'm Dan Red Victorio.
And yeah, it's been a not so busy week for news, but there is still plenty of stuff to talk about. This list is kind of half positive game news and half negative game news for the most part.
Yeah.
A number of teams getting shut down. A couple of teams getting, I don't know what, you want to say still existing somehow?
Yeah.
You know, some games that are coming out here in the near future that we can look forward to. So, yeah. Before we get to that, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I will kick it off here. I've been playing a good bit of Wilmot Works It Out, the follow-up to Wilmot's Warehouse that... takes it in a bit of a different direction versus being kind of a stressful warehouse management kind of game where you're taking possession of these packages that you need to organize in whatever way that fits. You get the you get to stay at home. Wilmot gets to stay at home and he orders one of those boxes that comes. I think the way they frame it here, I think it's every day from the puzzle club that sends you puzzles that you work out into full pictures that then you can place on your wall as art as you go. I think you probably get usually like 8 to 10 per season. And there's a decent amount of seasons in this, so you get to... kind of fill out your whole place with a bunch of art. I think it's 8 seasons. Got through 4 so far. And they do kind of tell you when you finish it, like how long it took you. I don't know if this is going to be like a speedrun kind of game or not. But the achievements do mention a new game plus that has me wondering what the hell's going on with this game then. But yeah, once you finish the season's puzzle or the puzzles, you open up a new room in the house. And then you swap all the art that you have from that season to that room. And then from there, you can kind of organize and move that stuff around as you like. So I have like stuff in the bathroom, the bedroom. I forget what else I have unlocked right now. But yeah, like a living room type area. Otherwise, you kind of, once you're done, you move back to the main like entrance room. That is where you put all your puzzles together, and yeah, you kind of get the each day's worth of things that you kind of move to. It's neat because the boxes you get don't have like one puzzle's worth of pieces in it. It's just a random amount, it seems like, of pieces that you kind of put together in assortments, like where you're like, okay, I think these go together. And as you get pieces that actually do fit together, they will lock together. But you can break apart if you need to, because I've had a number of times where I've sort of locked them together with a missing spot in the middle, and I had to break open so I could put the actual middle piece in there. And they do some cool designs that are like tricking you with how you do them. Like I had one just look like, oh, here's the top and bottom bun for a burger. And it's like, okay, these go together. And like, no. That's because there's multiple layers on that that came in each day. I was like, oh, this is a fun way to trick you. Thing like, oh, this is a simple one. And nope, it'll take some time. And others that have similar patterns and similar colors, you're like, okay, these must go together. And it's like, no, these are two different puzzles. And like, oh, okay, that's it's tricky. I think I've only had like one that was really tricky because it was kind of like a chessboard of sorts. So it was these two different colors that I didn't think went together. And the way that you could tell they went together was a bit tricky, and I just couldn't see it clearly. So I kind of just, if you just brute force it, just pick up a piece and just put it next to various ones and see which ones go together, and then just kind of fit them together through there. But yeah, it's not a complicated game or a difficult game or anything, but it's a nice chill game with some good music and all that, and it's just fun. And you get to, a little bit of story as your postal carrier is dropping off the package and like talking a little bit as you get it. And you get a little bit of story about what's going on with her life and mm-hmm. some of the stuff that's going on in the outside world. It's like your place is getting changes that are happening in a way that I'm like, wait, we're just sitting here putting puzzles together. But I guess in his off time that you don't see, he's like having the house remodeled and doing some other stuff in a way that's like, okay. But I'll also get to get a little taste of what the postal carrier's life is. She goes for a trip at one point. Mm-hmm. They get a different guy that shows up with a puzzle and he has zero interest in chatter. Mm. So you're like, okay, this guy's just here to give you the puzzle, the box, and then leave. Where I think where I'm at, the postal carrier is like, oh, I got in on this too. And it's like describing like her troubles with certain puzzles, that kind of stuff. And it's like, okay, there's a little bit more here than I thought it was, but yeah, it's pretty cool. It's $15 on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
I think GOG and Itch, it also is on, but not on the consoles yet, but I assume it'll be at some point. But that's a very fun game. I'm looking forward to playing some more of that. Works well on the Steam Deck and all that. So yeah, looking forward to put some more time into that. It's probably like a 6 to 8 hour game. Nothing too complicated there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's see. I've been playing Alan Wake 2 because they just put out a big update that added a bunch of new options to it, as well as accessibility options. They have some really nice features that they allow somebody like me who does not like the scariness of horror games, but occasionally likes the gameplay or the story of those kind of games and the jump scares and dread-inducing kind of settings kind of don't work well for me most of the time. I've been able to play through stuff like Until Dawn because you're not really doing any combat really in that game. It's all predetermined scenes and stuff like that, whereas you know, stuff like Dead Space really fucks me up. So, but Alan Wake 2, they added some cool accessibility options. For invincibility is the one I'm using, where enemies cannot do damage to you. You still have the ability to die in certain situations, where there might be, I assume, like insta-kill scenarios, that kind of stuff. There's an immortality mode that I believe lets you keeps you from dying. So you can potentially just play with that and take damage, but not take like whatever fatal damage you would take, so you still have to worry about health and all that. There's a one-hit kill mode that you can turn on that makes the combat a bit simpler, even more. So it kind of lets you tune that stuff to the way that works best for you, whatever might be the thing that's causing you the most issues with the game, which is great to see. I think more horror games should have that kind of stuff, because there are a lot of cool horror games out there that maybe just have one aspect of it that doesn't work super well for you. Could open up those games to more people, because we get a lot of that kind of stuff in shooters and puzzle games and platformers and that kind of stuff that make good use of that. And horror games, I think, are similar that way. So, yeah, I have gotten through the point where I am, let's say, past the intro for both characters, Saga Anderson and Alan Wake, and I am investigating further as Saga is looking into the notion that she has a life in Bright Falls that she didn't know. That is being influenced by the story in the Dark Place that has created this life where, you know, initially you have the lady at the diner. It's like, oh, hey, Saga, you know, great that you're still here after your daughter died. She's like, what are you talking about? And all that. And then she finds out, like, oh, I suppose they have a trailer here in town. And goes, that's where I'm at right now. I was about to go check that out. But there's a bridge that gets taken out, or a road that gets taken out by flooding. It seems like, at least in Bright Falls, there's been a lot of flooding when things get weird. And so, yeah, that's been fun to kind of dig into the weirdness of this world and how it all works. Alan's segments seem to be the weaker of the two so far. Like more because the enemies he's had to face with the sort of semi-transparent shadow creatures are just not visually interesting at all. They're just kind of like, you know, you have to kind of really pay attention to notice them at times, especially with how dark the game is.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways, because you go into the diner and you're like, well, this place should be pretty bright, you know, so the chef in the back can see what he's doing, but nope. Almost pitch black in there, and you're like, what the hell's wrong with this place? There's a lot of dark areas, and that's obviously why they give you flashlights and all that. But it's like, I was going through the back areas to go to the trailer park. It was like, seemed like, you know, afternoon, late afternoon kind of vibes, and it's like, this is getting real dark here for some reason. Maybe that's partly because there's enemies around, I guess. Something like that. But yeah, it's like, this place gets dark in a way that it seems, you know, or at least because it's supernatural, but it also doesn't necessarily need to be. But outside of the main mechanic of, you know, shining your flashlight on enemies to break the shadow around them so you can attack them.
Yeah.
Which is a fine mechanic. I don't know that it's like a great hook for the combat here, but they seem to stick with it. I remember that being kind of an annoying part of the original game for what I played with it. I'd say Saga's combat's kind of more interesting, especially I got the crossbow, which is a nice weapon because it doesn't use ammo unless you happen to shoot one out of the area you can reach. I guess you take out enemies with it, the bolts will stick in them pretty easily, and that's always a nice thing with those kind of weapons, crossbows or bow and arrows, that kind of stuff. The story's been really nice to kind of dig into. They don't really do too much to catch you up on what happened in the first game or the follow-up, the American Nightmare thing that I think features Scratch.
Yeah.
Who is Alan's evil doppelganger.
Yeah.
That has been doing some real fucked up shit while he's been trapped in the dark place for 13 years. Especially to his wife. Saw the whole documentary she made about it. That's all weird, but yeah, like the FMV stuff is pretty cool. A lot of dumb, funny bits from the two guys that are definitely not from Bright Falls, but happen to be living there. Definitely aren't like people on the development team. And yeah, they have a fun bit where you get to the fake talk show with Alan Wake on there and Sam Lake's on there as the actor who's playing Alex Casey in the movie versions of his books. He does the Alex Casey face or the Max Payne face, if you know that.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty fun little bit they do there.
Yeah, it's Sam Lake. He's the head design. He's one of the head designers at Remedy.
Yeah, one of the heads of the studio.
Yeah,
he plays Alex Casey in the real world in Saga Anderson's partner, who does not like that there's a detective in a book series named has the same name as him.
And also looks like him too.
Yeah. And yeah, Saga keeps finding those lunch boxes around. He's like, oh, I gotta tell Casey about this. Then you get to like the dark world where Alan Wake is, and he gets to like a version of whatever New York City or whatever it is that has posters for the movies, and the names they have for all of those are pretty good. Or they work in some cheesy reference to Alex Casey's name in it. You know, like Hard Casey. And it's like, geez, the names for these would be terrible movies, but they're pretty good as jokes in the game. But yeah, it's a pretty good game. Looking forward to playing some more of it. Seeing some good ties into Control as you run into a couple of people in references to the Bureau of Control. That kind of stuff. As well as Ati, who is kind of the weird character that has appeared in both these universes.
Yep.
And yeah, so that's been fun. I don't have the deluxe edition, so I don't have the fancy outfits for them or the other DLC. I'll probably get them at some point, but I gotta beat the game first. But yeah, there's that. And then I've also been playing some more Metaphor ReFantazio. I'm still in that first dungeon. It's a huge dungeon. I've been dealing with how tough it is, because I feel like you're not leveling up fast enough to deal with all the enemies at a certain point. Especially when you're trying to manage the sort of weaknesses and make sure you have your jobs working for that, so that you can take advantage of their weaknesses more easily. So I feel like I'm also wasting MP because I'm not doing the synthesis attacks as much. Because it's like a lot of the enemies are weak to light.
Yep.
Which the healer has, and I have that on the MC. Luckily this time around, putting them in the back row manages to stick versus previous time where that seemed to not work the way I wanted it to. But one of his synthesis attacks with either of the other characters does essentially a Mahama attack. And that works out well when you have enough of them around, but you can really burn through your MP real fast.
Oh, yes.
Especially if you're just trying to make your attacks count versus just doing a lot of basic physical attacks. So now I'm at the point where I'm running to more enemies that are resistant to those attacks, and so if you do that, you lose two of your turns on that turn, so you could end your side's turns real quick if you're not paying attention. And it's also, I recently realized I didn't need to go back to academia to swap the jobs.
Yeah.
That makes a lot more manageable. Though I'm also getting the hunch that I should probably try and open up all the jobs for each of the characters.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah, I've been opening up like one or two extras. But managing all the equipment gets to be kind of a chore on that stuff. I've been getting stuff that is like, okay, who does it work for? Because it doesn't really make it easy to find it. They don't really highlight as much in the equipment screen. The main item screen, they do highlight the new stuff, but I feel like I've had things I've picked up and been like, how do I even find this? Is it stuff I have to go take back to get identified, like it's a Diablo game? But I've gone and purified a few items, so I got some good equipment that's much more powerful now, so that helps. There's just a lot of shit going on to manage at all times. It's maybe not really a knock, it's just a thing you have to deal with. It's not like, you know, normal Persona game where you're upgrading your equipment mostly outside of dungeons. And you're doing that by turning in all the scrap you get to afford that stuff, whereas here you're kind of getting a lot of the better equipment in the dungeons. It's more checking these stores to see, like, did they get anything that's reasonably priced that is better than what I got? Sometimes there is. I also kind of wish it made it easier to be like, oh, do you want to equip this for this job? It only does it for, I think, the currently equipped one. Which is why I'm a little hesitant to have everybody having all the same jobs. Because one, they're not all cheap to unlock for each character. For the mag that I have. But yeah, I'm basically dealing with a lot of that stuff, and I'm basically in a part of the first dungeon where there's no save spots for quite a distance, because I played for about 30 minutes and I had to run back all the way to the one that was on the floor below before I went up, where you do that first big, like, mid-dungeon boss that's the white-clad soldiers that are has a bunch of the dead ones hanging out with them. Which I went into with, like, almost no MP on two of my characters. I was like, I gotta rectify this before I even bother trying it again. So I reloaded that a few times, especially with, like, the first attacks I was doing. I was missing and wiping out all my turns and being putting on just such a bad foot. To restart and reload. That kind of stuff. But yeah, that's been pretty much what I've been doing. So how about you, Brandon?
Yeah, I have been playing, and last night I beat Metaphor ReFantazio. And yeah, that very last boss battle is insane. It is an absolute marathon, and it took me about half an hour to finish it. Essentially, what happens is the very last boss, and I'm not going to give away who it is, the last boss, they do two things where they transform into a form that has, like, three separate faces, and each one of these faces you have to kill, you know, you have to finish, beat, to basically finish what is, in effect, their first form. And the thing is, during this, they will also eat these, like, effigies of, like, various members of the party, and when they do that, it gives them a huge magic boost so that they can hit you with a really nasty all-powerful attack that can not only really take a hit on your health, but it can also cause a bunch of really annoying status effects. Things like, you know, anxiety, intimidation, stuff like that. But then after you beat that, it then splits open and reveals their true face underneath it, which then is a whole other boss battle you got to go through. And the worst part about this one is that they basically start out with, like, six actions that they can go through before you can even start fighting yourself. And this is everything from, you know, taking away any status buffs you might have, hitting you with another attack that can give you status effects, charging up to do, like, a really nasty attack, charging up a one-hit, one-kill attack that will take out someone in your party. And even worse, they will do this action called Soul Scream, which is something that a bunch of the bosses do, where once they do this, it'll give them two to four more action points that they can use against you. So yeah, it's difficult, but I did finally beat them, and it took me a little while, and it did. And I'm not really going to give away the ending or anything. All I will say is that if you've played Persona games, you know how after you beat the final boss, you still got stuff that you got to do. You still got, you know, stuff to go through. Same way here, basically. There's, like, a time skip, and it shows you, like, how the kingdom has changed and everything after the final battle and everything. And it also gives you a bunch of little crumbs about a possible sequel. So, like, one of the characters ends up becoming sort of your reconnaissance, more or less, and they end up going on ships and sort of traveling across the ocean and showing that, yes, there is definitely other places out there that are inhabited and have their own people with their own customs and everything. There's also like talk among the townspeople about new candidates and everything, which seems to imply that there might be other elections happening. But yeah, all in all, yes, this game is definitely going to go on my game of the year list. But on top of that, I've also been playing Dead Space, the most recent version of Dead Space. And I will say this about this version of Dead Space. Unlike in the last one, in the original, where the monsters will kind of slow down a little bit so that they can give you a chance to actually attack them. They don't do that here. In fact, they will not only run up on you, they can be surprisingly sneaky as well. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So Daniel, what about you?
Yeah, for me, it was, I played a lot of Metaphor Re Fantasio too, but before I talk about that, I want to just go a little bit more into East 10 Nordics, which came out this Friday on the Switch, PlayStation, and PC. And yeah, you know, I've talked about it for the past few weeks now. I don't like it as much as 8 or 9. But that being said, like, I do feel like I have been a little bit harsh on it. And the reason why was just because the battle system was just tough to grasp. And the reason why the battle system is tough is there's no block, and dodging is harder than it has to be. The reason being is they tie all of that to the left shoulder button. And basically it turns into a dash, and that allows you to, like, you know, dodge all these moves. And when you use your dash mode and your duo mode, because you're using both Adol and Karja, who's a character you meet in the game, and you find out you have the ability to switch between both those characters, it builds another meter that allows you to, you know, unleash all sorts of hell on the enemies. And I feel like that ended up being harder than they intended it to be, at least for me. I know a lot of people in the industry, they enjoyed the game a whole lot more than I did, and they enjoyed the battle system a whole lot more than I did. And eventually, like, you know, it worked out, but, you know, I definitely still feel that way regarding it. The main thing is, though, I do think the story is pretty strong. You know, the girl you meet, Karja, she's known as the Pirate Princess of the Baltic Sea Force, which is pretty much like a pirate organization that sort of controls the archipelago of that area. And, like, not a lot of people like them, but at the same time, it's like one of the reasons why they're as powerful as they are is because they're the only ones that can actually use mana and, like, beat these enemies called the Grieger that you'll find in the game. But yeah, the story is pretty strong. The reason why it just didn't really hit for me was because I was expecting more out of, like, the 10th entry in the series. I expected it to be a real milestone, and it was more, not really more of the same, but I really feel like it didn't do anything to move the series forward. And that being said, it doesn't mean it's a bad game at all. It's still definitely one of the better classical action RPGs you can play. And, you know, East has never been bad. At the same time, like, with all the other RPGs that came out over this past year, including Metaphor Re Fantasio, it's just a little rough around the edges, but again, not bad at all. So anyway, back to Metaphor. 20 hours in, so I have significantly more time in it than I did last week. And let me tell you, as much as I'm enjoying it, it's also really hard. I'm finding this game to be quite difficult. The reason being, and it's like it's similar to, like, a lot of the other Persona games. When you go to a dungeon, and, you know, you go ahead and feel your way through all the enemies, you're going to end up using a lot of your magic power. And one of the cycles in this game is it's almost impossible to recover your magic power early on in the game, and I'm early on in it. And I am not really enjoying having to leave dungeons as early as I am in order to recover and then go back, because I feel like I waste a day. And when you waste a day in these games, like, it kind of hurts, because these are, you know, with these days that you're using up, you can be raising, you know, your stats, your royal orders, and, you know, whatever not to call them. And yeah, it's really fun just doing things that don't even involve the main plot, like learning about all the characters, learning about all the different archetypes you can use. But what I am liking so far is that while you think about how to strategically go through all these dungeons to escape with the most amount of MP possible, it kind of forces you to be creative. You know, you get to a point where you can change your archetypes at any point in the game rather than having to go to the academia all the time. So that is rather interesting. Like one thing that I'm doing as I'm going through these dungeons, especially when they involve the side quests or the requests that you have to do, is, for example, there's going to be a lot of bounty hunts, and you want to be able to like fight the certain boss out of that certain dungeon. And it doesn't exactly move the plot over, but it's also good for grinding. What I'm doing is I'm just running around, not fighting anything at all, just getting all the treasure, getting all the spoils, and I'm killing like all of the easy enemies there are around. And then when it gets to a point where like I know what everybody is weak against, then I go ahead and be a little bit more aggressive with the attacks I'm using. And I found that strategy to be pretty effective because there are some side quests where in order to make the boss appear, you have to kill X amount of enemies on the map. And so when I do that, I end up having enough MP to use. And then after you beat the boss, you have the option of choosing to leave the dungeon right away or choosing to stay there for a little bit. And I always choose to stay there for a little bit because I'm finding the grinding to be rather useful. One of the key points with this game is when you press on the home button, as long as you're online, you can tell what other people who are playing the game in that certain point in time, where they are with their levels, where they are with the archetypes or classes they've chosen. And it's kind of a way to steer you towards, doing whatever you want to do, whether you want to go against the grain or just copy what everyone else has done. And the main thing that I've noticed was that I'm underleveled. I don't know if it's because I went through the dungeon so fast, but that's also what's caused me to go ahead and stay in there a little longer, grind until I'm out of MP, and then work from there. Because the one thing that this game really does that I'm enjoying and also not enjoying at the same time is that it pretty much challenges all of my assumptions that I've made when playing JRPGs all these years. I don't know about you, like when you played the game early on, Brandon, but when you have to use an item, for example, using an item that'll like heal your MP, you feel like an idiot because you want to save all that for the final boss. But here, like, you can't be as conservative because, if you spend 3 hours in a dungeon and then die, you're screwed. You got to do it. It's not that you have to do it over again, but you lose a lot of that progress if you didn't already save in between or use an autosave. And sometimes you don't know when it's going to autosave. So that makes it a little bit more difficult. But yeah, I've gotten to a point where I don't want to talk too much about this character, but I got Heisme. This guy is awesome. I love this guy. Like this dude is probably like my favorite character in any game that I've come across this year. He might be the reason why this game ends up being my game of the year. I don't want to say that yet, just because I just talked about my struggles and issues with it. But yeah, the game is definitely on the fun side. It's definitely finally pulled me. It's pulled me in a way that East 10 hasn't. And yeah, I can't wait to dive back in and do some more. Also, like once you have him, it just feels a little bit easier just because, you have that full party, you have that party of four, and you feel like you can go ahead and use not necessarily your combos, but it feels like your strategies can feel more complete because you know what to account for, and I really enjoy that aspect of it. And then yeah, aside from that, I've also been playing some Mario Party Jamboree, and I feel weird saying this as a 35-year-old, but this might be the best Mario Party there is. The reason being is, prior to this, we had Mario Party Superstars, which was really sort of a best in class as far as like remaking some of the old Mario Parties. You had some of the best boards and mini games from the N64, and Mario Party Jamboree does a little bit of that while also bringing in a whole lot more. And one of my issues with a lot of the latter entries of Mario Party is that they just like went a little too topsy-turvy with the rules instead of like focusing on the board game. Like I remember there was Mario Party 10 on, I believe it was Wii U, or I don't know, maybe it was the original Wii, where all four of the people who play the game are going to be in a car, and all of a sudden like they go through the spaces that way, and it didn't really feel like you were competing. Whereas with this, like all of the original friends screwing fuck yous with stealing coins and stars are back in fruition, and you also have the option of turning all that stuff off. There's a pro mode in the game that takes away all the chance time spaces. It makes the stars a little bit more obvious as to where they'll be next. It also allows you to, whenever you buy an item from the shop, you can't buy it again, and these kinds of things. And it feels a whole lot more skill based. So if you want to avoid the random stuff that makes Mario Party a game for jerks, it definitely does that. At the same time, it does a good job with the mix of both, standard button pressing mini games versus the ones where you have to use motion controls. That being said, the motion control games are actually pretty good. My main issue with them is that if you decide to use a pro controller, you're not going to have any of those motion games at all. And then if you decide to, use the Joy-Cons, they're all in there, and you don't really have the option to turn them off. So, there are a little they are a little bit rough on the edges on that side. But at the end of the day, like, a lot of care went into this Mario Party game. For example, like, you have a lot more freedom with some of the characters you use. Like, you can use Goombas and all sorts of other baddies. And it's funny because, when Goombas pass by Koopas and all that, like, they're all acting like, hey, we're friends. But when they pass guys like Mario or Luigi on the game boards, they're all acting like total jerks to each other. And, like, it's really just a nice thing that really just ties it all together. And you could really tell that, I believe the developer is N-Cube, who makes these now, not Hudson anymore. You could really tell that they really have the grasp for Mario Party. Both Super Mario Party and Mario Party Superstars on the Switch were good, and this game is even better than them, and that's why I think this might be the best Mario Party there is. Another one of my favorite things that they bring back are the duels, where in the last five turns, if you land on another character's space, you end up playing a mini game where you can go ahead and fight for each other's coins, fight for your star, whatever it may be. And then there's also, like, some mini games that are similar to games like Rhythm Heaven and WarioWare. So, like, again, like, the mix of mini games and the board games are great. There are a few things that are a little rough to play, especially in the single player mode. But if you're, like, looking for a Mario Party game that brings back the magic, if you will, or the entertainment of playing Mario Party with, like, three friends or three family members locally, it's all there. It doesn't feel like it's ever changed, and it feels like it's a whole lot better despite how old we've become. So, yeah, that's about it.
Awesome.
Well, all right, let's get to some news. And
Yeah.
we got some games that have gotten updates. Some cool updates. No Man's Sky, once again, has decided that they need to be putting out a big update. This time it is to coincide with their 16th expedition called The Cursed, which is, supposed to be a very Halloween-esque kind of expedition here. Yeah, kind of setting you off on a new little campaign of stuff to do. Particularly, as I say here, it takes place in a sort of Twilight realm. Travelers do not have access to hyperdrive technology, meaning the warping between star systems. Said interstellar travel can only take place via the ancient portal network, which is a bunch of weird things that's. We haven't played No Man's Sky in a while is something that's a fairly recent addition to the game. But yeah, they mentioned that there's going to be, you're going to be hearing haunting voices speaking through from another dimension that'll provide guidance information, strange blueprints, and mystery. And yeah, you're fighting a lot of, like, ghostly kind of enemies, creatures, and all kinds of weird stuff that's going to happen as a result. So yeah, it looks like it's a cool thing there. So yeah, they're adding some. Yeah, let's see. Yeah, a bunch of new stuff here for you to unlock in that expedition, as well as some update stuff that fixes a lot of bugs, adds some new stuff, and all that. It's not as extensive as their big named updates, but that's cool. Look forward to checking that out at some point here. Let's see, the next update we got is for Balatro. The second Friends of Jimbo pack has been added that adds new collaboration decks with Cyberpunk 2077, Binding of Isaac, Slay the Spire, and Stardew Valley. So you get some new card faces there for that. So you get some more fun stuff going on there. And then sort of in the same vein, Dave the Diver has its new indie collaboration update that they announced earlier this year that has collaborations with MXM Tune, Balatro, Potion Craft, and yeah, add some new content based around that stuff. Yeah, MXM Tune is like an anime music thing. to get to the popular singer-songwriter visits Bancho Sushi and get a little special concert at a certain point.
Mm.
With that, Bellatro. Seems like you get like a new game in there, like a mini game thing.
Mm-hmm.
That has become popular between all the sea people. So you can play against the sea people, earn a special charm.
Mm-hmm.
And then Potioncraft adds characters from the game that visits Bancho Sushi. You help them find their magic cauldron, earn a new crafting item, used to make potions with buffs and bait for the crab trap.
Mm.
That adds essentially new ingredients and recipes that you can purchase from the Mushroomer from there.
Mm.
And you get some other collaboration stuff they mention here with codes you can put in the game. Get phone charms based on those properties. As well as some new mini games, some new feature stuff, and yeah, a bunch of other things in there. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, some cool updates there.
Yeah.
Speaking of things that people have been waiting for a long time for, Starbound is out now for Xbox One, 8 years after it came out on PC.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that's like, it's very weird, because this game was very hyped up originally back mm-hmm. in the day, because it was from like one of the artists of the of Terraria that sort of spun off to make a new game.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like, oh, we're going to make Terraria in space kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty cool idea. Got published by Chucklefish and came out. I think it did well, but it was in early access for quite a long time. I don't know if it's mm-hmm. still in early access, but then it kind of just disappeared at a certain point. I think it's done getting updates.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, I'm going to try and see what they're... it's not early access anymore. It's themes, but I don't see any news updates here. Recent ones, at least. Yeah, the last one was in 2019.
Mm.
But in updates. So it's kind of weird that they never brought it to any consoles before this. It seems like it would have been a great fit for have it on Xbox, PlayStation, and Switch. A few years ago, at least.
Mm-hmm.
I believe also part of this is that the PC version was on PC Game Pass for the last 4 years. But just has just kind of stayed there. Again, not really getting any major updates or anything
mm-hmm.
to it. So it's kind of just like a weird situation where you're just like, oh, this game still exists. In a way that they're like trying to get to new platforms.
Mm.
And maybe this Xbox One version is maybe some deal they had from the Game Pass deal. They would get it on Xbox One at some point. But yeah, it seems like the big things they've added to this is controller support, toggleable auto-aim accessibility feature, co-op play with up to 4 players, and all the updates that have been added to the PC version over the years. So, but yeah, that's been on the PC Game Pass for almost 4 years at this point, December 7th, 2020.
Mm-hmm.
But the game's been out since July 22nd of 2016.
Yep.
So that's just like, okay. There's at least somebody that's still working on this game, but
mm-hmm.
They kind of missed their window on getting out. Like, this is the Xbox One, not even Xbox Series X and S.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, oh. They're not doing a lot of major work to get it in better shape for, say, the new consoles.
Mm.
So, yeah. Hopefully that comes out of more consoles, but yeah, that's kind of a game that had a lot of potential and a lot of excitement for it that kind of petered out at a certain point, whereas Terraria and Stardew Valley and those kind of games just came out on consoles and have continued to add new content and just sell really well as a result.
Mm-hmm.
Starbound probably should have been on that list of games, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. I think you can check out on Xbox, I guess.
Mm.
But yeah, let's see here. Oh yeah, coming up this week, there's a big open beta test coming for Monster Hunter Wilds.
Mm-hmm.
That'll begin October 28th for PlayStation Plus members and October 31st for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be playable until November 3rd. So if you have the PS5, Xbox Series, X and S, and or a PC, you can check it out here for most of this week. So, mm-hmm. And that'll be starting tomorrow on Monday for PlayStation mm-hmm. Plus members. So that's cool.
Mm.
I'm trying to see what else they've added here for this game. I could get to play some of the early stuff in the game, but I don't know if it transfers over or not.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool move. I don't know if this is something that Capcom has done with Monster Hunter in the past. You know, somebody might have to check on with all that. But, you know, my main thing here is that it is a little early. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like, this is actually for real testing. You know, this is a point where... you know, you want to go ahead and break it so that they can go ahead and fix it because you know, yeah, like this is more than a demo. It's an actual like beta to see how things go. So happy to see them do that, and this will probably result in more sales because like you know you do a demo that matters. That's great. I don't know if they're going to include anything for people that actually buy it, but hopefully they will.
Yeah, well, it seems like if you play this, you get a special bonus pendant. To decorate your weapons or your mount mm-hmm. alongside a helpful item pack in the full release of Monster Hunter Wilds. This will have crossplay as well, so you can play with anybody that is on those consoles. There are three separate experiences: the complete character creation tool with character creation mm-hmm. data that will transfer to the full game, story trial, which they describe as players can experience the opening cutscene of the game along with the basic tutorials while hunting a Chatacabra. While in the Doshiguma hunt, players can pursue the free-roaming Doshiguma hunt's the last thing. So it's like, I guess, open world stuff. You can pursue the alpha of a Doshiguma pack or explore the Windward Plains. Both those can be experienced solo, or players can use an SOS flare to create a party of up to four players, calling assistance from NPC support hunters. So, yeah, seems like a decent amount of content. I think they're doing this now because, one, it's the fall season. Game's out in February, so they're kind of probably trying to bolster the excitement around the game, keep it going,
mm-hmm.
As they've been putting out a lot of trailers lately for it. So I imagine they're trying to keep that going because it can be pretty easy to lose track of that going into the early part of the year.
Mm.
So, yeah, that seems like a solid thing. Seems like in Japan they got some special DualSense controllers in console plates for the mm-hmm. Slim to check out there, so that's cool. You want to spend some more money? But yeah, looking forward to that. I'll probably play that this week.
Mm.
And yeah, speaking of Halloween, Vampire Survivors has some DLC coming out this week.
Yep.
They're finally wrapping it around full circle with the Ode to Castlevania DLC.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be out on Thursday. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Over 20 new characters are being added to this game. They mm-hmm. got various Belmonts, including Simon Richter, Trevor, and even Sonya, the Belnades,
mm-hmm.
Sypha, Yoko, and even distant relatives like Charlotte and Maria. And then other heroes, not just Jonathan and Charlotte, but Jonathan Morris and John Morris. And also Shinoa and Eric Lacard. Who the hell most of those people are, but I'm sure they've been in a Castlevania game.
Mm-hmm.
There's over 40 new weapons. So that's cool. A bunch of whips, spells, magic weapons, projectiles, and glyphs. Special weapon selectors. Big new stage for this. 30 new music tracks. Probably any good song you've heard in a Castlevania game will probably be in this.
Mm-hmm.
They mentioned like Bloody Tears, Simon's theme, Leon's theme.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a bunch of them. So yeah, that's cool. Looking forward to that. Some more nonsense to throw in there. And finally, the game that created legally distinct pixels mm-hmm. of a Castlevania stuff to put in the game now get official ones, I guess. So you may get stuff that doesn't look like testicles Other things you have to call Santa water. So yeah, that's one for that. And the last one we have here is Metal Slug Tactics. Will be out next week,
yep, on
November 5th. For everything, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
There's a physical edition that'll be happening later, but yeah.
Yeah, people have been anticipating this one for.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting spin on the franchise there.
Mm-hmm.
Getting like a tactics RPG kind of game out there that mm-hmm. looks pretty cool. Yeah, this one's published by .mu and developed by Linkier Studio.
Mm.
So no SNK directly being supported, but obviously this still goes towards SNK, who is funded or and mostly owned by the Saudi Arabian investment fund.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Fun stuff there. Yeah. So yeah. Let's see. Let's get to industry news. There's mostly a bummer here.
Mm-hmm.
We'll start off one of the bigger bummers. Netflix has shuttered their big budget game studio that mm-hmm. it built a couple of years ago. They had people like Joseph Staten as one of the heads of the studio,
mm-hmm.
As well as some other notable people that have been there. I think at least a few dozen people have been there working on something, but in 2 years they're obviously not very close to having anything
yeah.
to show for that work. So it seems like Netflix wanted to mm-hmm. make a big game and sort of show off their commitment to the industry, and probably somebody else came into power in that part of the company and is like, what the fuck are we wasting all this money for? This isn't close to being done. Cut it down.
Mm-hmm.
So a bunch of people are out of work, unfortunately. And yeah, not really a new thing. We saw what Google did, where they created a whole new platform built around cloud mm-hmm. gaming and hired a ton of people to work on internal first-party games for that platform. And before they could even get close to making anything, mm-hmm. Google had announced they were getting out of the games business and laying them all off.
Mm-hmm.
Even with the big names that it had there, it very much seems like anybody in the tech industry that thinks they could just get into games, especially making stuff on the level of what Microsoft and Sony and some of the other companies put out,
mm-hmm.
don't seem to have the appreciation for how much time it takes to do that, especially when you're starting with a team that's being built from scratch. How much work goes into just figuring out what everybody's doing, what engine you're working on, what sort of game you're doing, what everybody's going to be doing, especially in those early parts of the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Or is everybody just figuring out what the fuck they want to make and how to make a little thing and expand that as they go?
Mm-hmm.
That just takes several years at least, and a lot of these companies don't have time for that. They expect it to be a quick turnaround.
Mm-hmm.
Or they seem to, at least. But yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to downplay the fact that this sucks. You know, obviously mm-hmm. with every layoff we report, you know, it's going to hit close to home, especially with what happened to me. And yeah. But like the main reason why like I want to say that this is a little different, despite the fact that this is definitely a AAA decision, is the fact that Netflix has also like saved a lot of people while they went unemployed for whatever reason. It seemed like Netflix could be a place where you can land and, you know, hopefully find some stability. I know a lot of people who, you know, got picked up by Netflix when they were laid off over the last year and a half. And mm-hmm. yeah, here we are, you know, 2 years later again, and they're back right from square one. And it's unfortunate. That being said, like this also has like the same recipe of previous stories we've reported where, you know, these people from Blizzard or whoever you call it, like are a whole bunch of all-stars and they make an all-star studio, but then, you know, years pass and they've got nothing to show for it. And, you know, there's definitely reasons for that. You know, prototyping doesn't work out. But, you know, the bottom line here is game development is hard. And even though Netflix has definitely bankrolled and showed a lot of, devotion to the game industry, like you got to be able to show something, especially when you have like the people that you have on this staff. So again, like I feel for all these people. It sucks to, be, back to where you are again. But yeah, like I think this also like understates the importance of, we definitely need those double A B titles again. Like even though they probably won't amount to much, you never know if it ends up being a flash in the pan and it ends up being something that can take off. Like you can't actually like guess these things, especially, and even with all the analytics and stuff we have, it's just it's hard to say. But yeah, like the fact that we don't even have a clue of what they're even close to like working on, like that's not good either.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if part of the whatever severance pay they may get is like you're not allowed to ever mention what this game was publicly, and it's like that kind of stuff sucks because that's seems like they announced this team in April 2023, so might even have only been like a year and a half of work on this game, and it's like that's a year and a half you've taken out of all of these people's careers. And they have nothing to show for it, nothing they can put on their resume. They might have individual work they could maybe show for art and whatnot, but other than that, it's a shame when this stuff happens. But yeah. Let's get to another story, another disappointing story. The Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown, sold poorly enough that Ubisoft has essentially disbanded the team and moved the people around to other teams. I think there's a rumor that there's some new Rayman project that some of them are going to work on now. Others are going to Beyond Good and Evil 2, which seems to be the dead zone you send them to, like we talked about it in Japan, the blank room that you send them to try to get them to quit. Except Ubisoft has endless projects that never will finish, but people can go and work on them until they maybe have something better to do. But yeah, it seems like this game just did not do well at all, despite it coming out at a pretty good time of the year in January when not much was out and was an extremely good one of these games. At $50, it seems like that might have been the issue people had, really. Especially as an Ubisoft game where now when it's on sale, it's like 20, $25, it's half off of that price. And it's like, oh yeah, that seems like the price. Maybe they should have bit the bullet and put it out at $30. Maybe that would have done better, but also, it was a very highly polished game that looked really good, far better than maybe other games in that price range that have been out there. But it seems like the market generally seems to believe at this point that Nintendo is the only company allowed to make a bigger budget, Metroid style game that costs full price versus being closer to the $10 to $30 range that a lot of indies and mid-budget games kind of go at.
Yeah, I mean, this is a bummer to hear. We know how well this game reviewed. We know how many people love this game. That being said, like, I don't know what Ubisoft's sales targets were for this game. Obviously, Prince of Persia is one of their biggest IP. But at the same time, like, as cool as Metroidvanias are, we all love Metroidvanias. They don't sell well, I think even Nintendo called Metroid Dread like a game that didn't really meet expectations, despite the fact that it was one of the fastest selling Metroid games available. So, you try to push this to Prince of Persia, a series that we haven't even seen in such a long time. I think even more than Metroid. It's a little rough. But that being said, like, yeah, we don't know what numbers they were supposed to hit. And then the main thing, like, especially for me, and I'm sure like you guys have also sort of adopted this policy with Ubisoft. As awesome as their IP are, they don't really value them. These games are going to be $20, a few months after release. I think Prince of Persia, what, released at 50, so we saw it at $30 for quite a while. And like one of the reasons why I haven't played it yet was because I knew that it was going to go down in price. I expected this game to be $20 at Black Friday, and we're probably going to see that happen soon. I bought it at $17 for the PS4 with the PS5 upgrade. That's a value to me, but at the same time, me getting this value means that Ubisoft is seeing less of that value, and that's tough. So maybe it did sell well, but because like people bought it at like such low prices, you're not going to see much of the gain there, and that's just a rough reality for Ubisoft, you know? Like just looking at what they can possibly do here, like I think the answer would have been to release this game on PC day and date at launch. Like that would have, you know, totally increased like their sales there, especially since PC is so big with indies, with Metroidvanias. They definitely would have like gotten the fruit of that labor really early, but instead it released on PC like what, a month ago or sooner or earlier than that. And yeah, that's not the best way you want to go about it. And yeah, that's rough. And like the other thing is, what should it stay at 50 or 60 longer? No, because unfortunately Ubisoft already has the stigma of being the company that discounts their games real quick. If they decided to keep their games at 60, I'm pretty sure nothing would sell. So yeah, it's a tough place to be in, especially knowing how good Prince of Persia was. I'm somebody that wants to see this series continue to thrive, and I don't know if we will, considering how much they've already delayed the remake of Sands of Time. But yeah, like I hope there's light at the end of the tunnel. I do feel bad about the fact that this team was disbanded. That being said, none of them were laid off, as far as we know. So, you know, everyone there has kept their jobs. I would hate to see them all being relegated to something like Just Dance or The Crew or something like that, because, you know, Ubisoft does make a lot of great single player open world, as well as, you know, those side scrolling titles. So I do hope it they see like some sort of fruit here. But yeah, this next story, like, you know, when I give my take, like you'll see why I don't really.
I believe this game just has not sold well. I don't know. I imagine price is probably a big part of it. It has been out on PC since launch. It's not on Steam. So I think it was on the Ubisoft thing there, but yeah, supposedly, yeah, supposedly like it had sold like maybe a few hundred thousand units, maybe a million by about now, but that apparently wasn't good enough for Ubisoft. At a certain point, I was looking, they dropped the MSRP to $40 back in July. For this game, and so when it's come on sale, it's been at like $24 versus going on sale for $30 before. So you can get it pretty good prices, and I think there's physical versions out there you can get. But I think part of it also is that they have not invested in the Prince of Persia franchise in a while. I was looking at the releases for most of the big games in the franchise, and most of them are in the 2000s. Within the Sands of Time trilogy, they did some classic remakes and some stuff like that, and then did the big reboot that I think did fine. Then they went and made the Forgotten Sands a couple years later to go back to the traditional formula for the series, and then kind of after the Forgotten Sands, didn't really make anything in the franchise for a long time. Not until they announced the Sands of Time remake that is never coming out at this point. I don't care that it has 2026 on it. That's too far away to be like that is coming out. So this essentially, I feel like this game probably also suffered for the Sands of Time remake's delays. If that had come out and hopefully would have been a solid version of the game, that would have helped The Lost Crown. But I feel like at this point, people wanted the Sands of Time remake, and I don't know that either of the other games they did, The Lost Crown or The Rogue Prince of Persia, which is made by one of the teams that worked on Dead Cells. I don't think either of those have done like super well, but also that's just like where this franchise is. It's not one that's in the public consciousness at this point. But hey, they managed to make a game that's one of the best rated games in Ubisoft history. I want to say it's one of their best since like Far Cry 3 or 4 or something like that, which is like should tell you a lot about how good the games they've made have been at launch since then, in the past like 15 years. But yeah, they need excellent games that come out at, you know, good times of the year for people to check out. Because otherwise, you know, Star Wars Outlaws just kind of shows why you wait on their games. But yeah, we do have more Ubisoft news. As I mentioned, seems like some of the people from the Prince of Persia Lost Crown team have moved over to Beyond Good and Evil 2. And that's because it seems like the game has new people working on it. A new director, supposedly, is in the lead role for this game. I'm trying to see if they have specifically mentioned who it is here. Yeah, now Fuzzy Mesmer, who had already been involved in overseeing the project as VP of Global Creative at Ubisoft, is also taking over Emil Morales' role as creative director for the game. So he was kind of at the helm of this game, so cool. Emil Morel unfortunately passed away last July in 2023. Unfortunately, I guess the game has been in limbo since then, like waiting for somebody else to get appointed for that, so they ended up picking this guy for it. And I don't really know much of his resume other than, I guess, having been there for quite a while. It seems to claim that the game is still going. Supposedly it's successfully passed an internal milestone with positive feedback from company leadership, which I would hope so. Be worse news if this guy was getting put on because it's been failing milestones, but also who knows what the hell this game is. The last time we saw it was with the help of Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yep.
Announcing they were doing a partnership for his little community creation sites. And I imagine that probably ended a while ago, but I don't know. Nobody knows what this game is at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you were talking about Joseph Gordon-Levitt, he was sort of like promoting NFTs before we knew they were called NFTs, and hopefully they've moved away from that. But that being said, like, I'm someone who would say he's a Beyond Good and Evil fan, even though I've never played the original. But like, yeah, like, and the reason why I say that is because like it's a game that I want them to make. That being said, the game was originally announced in 2008.
Yep.
That was 16 years ago. It's a different landscape now. When they announced it, Ubisoft was sort of on top of the world. Now they're a shell of their former selves. And as much as I would love this to be some sort of revival, as much as I would love this game to be great, and it's a very distinct possibility that it could, again, it's the announcement is 16 years old at this point. Like, normally when you announce a game, you kind of have an idea of what you want it to be. And as you mentioned, Chris, like, we don't know what this game is. You know, we've seen like footage of things like dogfights, even though like this game was like a Zelda clone back in the day. There are a lot of like lovable characters that, you know, we may or may not recognize now. And yeah, like the fact that we don't know where it is and it's 2024 and the game was announced back when the Xbox 360 was a thing. It's just, it doesn't really, you know, have much confidence there. And, you know, if the game ends up being good, and again, it very well can, there is absolutely no way this meets performance expectations. You know, like we talked about Prince of Persia being a sales failure. The fact that this game has been in development for 16 years means they're not going to get anything back. They're making this at a loss. So, like, I would not be surprised to see another disband after this game is done, if that game gets to this point. So, like, unless this game sells like hotcakes, and right now there aren't enough PS5s and Xbox Series X's in order for them to get what they want back, it's tough to say that, you know, we'll see this ever again.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I will say the Joseph Gordon-Levitt thing was not NFTs or anything like that. They're sort of a creative like co-op site that people can work together on projects and that kind of stuff. Not really any sort of NFT thing, just the way that works. But yeah, let's get to some more development news. This one's probably the most positive thing we have in this whole bunch. The Bungie creative team, Creative Studios team, has been integrated into PlayStation Studios. This is the thing we talked about with the layoffs they did a few months ago.
Yep.
That there were about 115 employees that were supposed to be moving over to Sony proper on their work in whatever they were planning for it. And we seem to have found out that they are being part of, I think this is a new group, the creative department at PlayStation. As there's been a few people named in this article, Bridget O'Neill, who's the former senior director of Bungie's Creative Studios, has been appointed as PlayStation senior director of its creative department. Her new position will see her quote unquote build the foundation or creative team that can support all PlayStation Live service games. The creation of a new studio to build one of its incubation projects is also part of the plans they have for bringing people over from Bungie to PlayStation. But I don't think they've had details on that yet when that's happening. But yeah, this seems like a solid idea here for bringing in various people from Bungie that maybe they don't need directly on the team, but can be sort of a partnership group with the various teams within and within outside of PlayStation that can help them get their legs in good shape for running a live service game, being ready to go with content for the longer term, how they market this stuff, I guess, whatever they all do. Just sharing the experience that people at Bungie have learned over the years and help out the various teams at PlayStation and their partners that are working on various games that help give them a better jump start than they've had before. Hopefully avoid more misfires like Concord and Last of Us Online game and Twisted Metal that they were working on. And have more stuff like Helldivers 2 and, you know, MLB The Show and some of that stuff that's been doing well for them. So yeah, that seems like some good news.
All right.
Yeah. Then let's get to some unfortunate news, I guess. Seems like we've got our first big game in the industry that has added AI tools to it. This is also very weird use of it. This goes into College Football 25. Sort of part of that game is that they have, you know, hundreds of teams in the game, real teams, thousands of players. So they added a big update recently that changes stats for people, ratings and all that, and added more players and new uniforms and such that the teams have been using lately, all that kind of stuff. But it also added something new, Adobe Express support. Program will let players design custom logos for stadiums and jerseys in College Football 25's team builder mode, either from scratch or using generative AI. As they say here, as part of the patch notes, team builder is getting an upgrade. We're excited to announce a new partnership with our friends from Adobe. Adobe Express, a content and design generation tool, is now integrated as an optional feature in the team builder, allowing you to express your creativity and customize your experience in more ways than ever. And so it's like, all right, for making logos and such, I guess. The weird thing is, being an Adobe service, it's not free. So players need to have an existing Adobe account, pay out of pocket for the generative tool. But you'll get 25 credits to start with. I don't know how the credits work. That seems like you'll pay for each thing you generate. That seems like what it would be. I don't know. That's dumb. I think people have been using it outside of the game and just importing into it. Yeah, some players already use Adobe to make their designs and import them separately, while others prefer to use the in-game tools.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said here, God, I hope they keep the Adobe thing as optional, because mm-hmm. I have a fear it will become Adobe everything by the next game, so they can have that partnership and reap more money off this game.
Yeah.
As well, Adobe, at least for me, is a slow-ass tool. So, yeah, that seems like what Adobe does.
Yeah.
They make tools that people are very excited to get away from.
Yeah.
Because they're the suitable replacement that doesn't try to charge them lots of money or screw them over in some way. But
yep.
Yeah, this is surprising, but I don't know. We'll have to see how this goes. I haven't seen anybody's use of this yet, but yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird thing. At the end of the day, though, I do have to say it does sort of make sense. I mean, I'm thinking about my fantasy football leagues that I run, and I use Adobe Express to make logos for them, too. I don't actually pay for it, though, so I don't know what kind of, like, tier they'd be using on EA servers or how that would work in a game. And, like, honestly, like, putting this kind of client in a game, like college football, sounds like it would take a whole lot of work. So, yeah. I mean, like, you know, as far as AI goes, obviously it's something that we're very much against, especially if it, you know, takes away the takes away even more jobs. But like this kind of usage, like, to me it makes sense. I hope we don't enter a world where we see everything branded by Adobe, much less in an EA game, although EA already commercializes the hell out of all their stuff. But yeah, I mean, I don't hate this one, but it's definitely a weird thing to keep note of, and definitely, like, you know, consider in the future. Hopefully it doesn't get, like, worse along the way.
Yeah. They do link to an FAQ about generative credits, and this seems like an Adobe credits thing. So you get it from the Adobe side, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. You get 25 for free used towards logo generation or design from scratch with the powerful design elements built into Express.
Mm-hmm.
They mention, you're like, what are generative credits? Generative credits enable the use of generative AI features powered by Firefly. I don't know what the hell that is. That must be some other Adobe thing. And certain other generative AI features in the applications to which you are entitled. Generative credit counts reset each month. I'm guessing is because you're paying monthly for this, so you get more each month. I don't. And there's lots of charts here of the tiers you're on, the plans you have, and how much you get every month. 25 seems to be the bottom of a lot of these.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if they're getting that as a result of buying the game. It's like a thing, or if you're getting 25 total, then you have to have the account to pay for more.
Mm-hmm.
I assume that's probably how it goes, because otherwise, why would it be Adobe give people free money when they clearly want you to have the plans to use it in here. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, no kidding.
Makes you appreciate the free stuff that people have been using in like Forza and Gran Turismo and MLB The Show and some of these other games.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's see. And the last one. This is probably the weirdest story. If you remember last year, the day before, this is the title of the game, that went from being Steam's most wishlisted at the time it was coming out to one that was getting review bombed because the game that people were getting to play was not what was sold to them as far as trailers and such, the sort of game they were expecting.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were essentially acting like, well, you're going to have to deal with it, and then decided to refund everybody's money.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this is a Russian team, so it seems like that went poorly enough that now about a year or so later, they decided to announce a new project.
Yep.
An Escape Factory that seem to be like, what if we made Fall Guys, but probably with assets from whatever engine we're using, free or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They put it on Kickstarter. with a $20,000 goal and did not make it. People were putting up joke offers for $10,000 to fund it that they investigated and realized they weren't real donations and rejected them.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the crowdfunding campaign never managing to climb above $3,146 from 50 backers, they canceled it entirely on the 23rd. Mm. Naturally, there were never any updates to the campaign, not even about why they were canceling it or anything. Mm-hmm. They deleted all of their previous social media posts about the project because that makes it go away, obviously. Mm-hmm. Kickstarter obviously doesn't let you delete the page or anything.
Yeah.
But their Twitter account was yet again completely wiped. The amusing note that we've decided to move all of our activities to Discord, where we can engage more closely with the community, which is not really why they would do it. They do that because it's not public-facing, easy to access, and they can ban anybody that's trying to hassle them. For the scams they're trying to run. And so this disappeared for a while. And no, all mention of Escape Factory and associated promises to change and improve are now removed. So the game's page on Steam still remains along with the demo. No public servers for it, so you can create your own private one, but you need at least 4 people total to play it. And I guess as of the writing of this article, it peaked at a total of 7 players, so your chances of getting into a game not super great.
Mm-hmm.
You line up other people to take the plunge for you. But yeah, earlier this week, they their Twitter account came back because they found a new scam, a game called Items. That seems to be a follow up to a game they made in 2021 called Prop Night. If you don't know that type of game, essentially, I believe it was coming from probably Gerismon, where essentially you would have one person essentially playing tag, and the other people would click on an object in the environment and turn into that object and try to find a place to hide it.
Yep.
Hope that the person doesn't figure out that they're the fake item that's hiding.
Yep.
Pretty simple game, but still pretty fun. That seemed to be their best one, claiming that it sold about 900,000 copies, but it's been deleted from Steam, so how would it have done that well if they deleted it? So they claim that the game site is a placeholder, but has a press kit that includes the logo for the game, as you see here. It says Items in kind of a Fortnite-esque font.
Yeah.
As well as like screenshots of like 2 character models. It's supposed to be like horror-ish kind of tinge to it, I guess. But yeah, that's kind of what they're doing. Let me see. A page-long letter posted to the refreshed Twitter account declares that we have decided that our Escape Factory project has not generated enough interest. So they've concluded that the Kickstarter is unlikely to succeed. No shit. So that game is temporarily suspended. Now they're on to the next project. Saying, your wishes are very important to us, and we are happy to announce the start of development on a new action horror prop hunt game called Items. Exactly what many of you have been waiting for. Once we have a fully playable demo, we may launch a new Kickstarter campaign or explore other options for release. Support us that our players get the chance to play and test the game in advance. And it's like, all right. I don't know that they should do a Kickstarter, because the recent history shows that nobody wants to support them. Well, they should just change the name of the studio. Or essentially shut down that studio and start a new team under a different name.
Yeah.
Because otherwise anybody seeing the name of their studio, which is Fantastic, essentially like fantastic without the A at the beginning, is poisoned at this point. And yeah, they posted this whole big message here about their new project and all that. And yeah, they quote a tweet here, response to it. And it has the perfect vibes. Are you fucking mad? If any people give these guys money, then they live in the same universe as Unicorn. Don't believe anything these people say, because they don't seem to ever want to change their tune.
Mm-hmm.
Just finding some new grift project to game some money out of people. And luckily that hasn't worked yet for them. But hey, they will keep going, I guess.
Mm.
So there you go. There's your fun story, I guess, of a team that tried to run a scam and had to give everybody's money back because they clearly did not sell what they were claiming they were selling. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, there you go.
Right.
But yeah, I think that's going to do it for the show this week.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you to Brandon and Danner for joining.
Always.
Yep.
We'll be back with a new slate of news here for next week as we head into November, as even more games are coming out. So,
yep,
that'll be fun. But yeah, let's see here. Thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, for let friends and family know, they should check it out and select strangers that are also excited for Halloween to be over.
Yeah,
although I think a lot of places have been doing Halloween today.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's that weird year where it's not on the weekend yet, so
yeah,
kids are having to deal with it being on a weird Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm trying to see what releases we have this week. Here we go. Yes, Clock Tower Rewind is out this week. Life is Strange, yep. Double Exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, the Pokemon trading card game Pocket for mobile is out. Mm-hmm. Week.
Oh, cool.
Dragon Age The Veilguard, Horizon Zero Dawn Remastered, Redacted, which if you don't know that game, that is a game from the people that made the Callisto Protocol, mm-hmm. But it's a Vampire Survivors yep. game.
Yep, that's mm-hmm. awesome.
Redacted is like $25.
Yeah,
check it out. Shadows of the Damned Remaster is out this week.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, that's... Oh, let's see. Another Arrow the Acrobat game got remastered. So cool.
Yep.
Formaggia is out. Yeah. Yeah, that seems to be it for this week. Mm-hmm. Some cool stuff. The Horizon Zero Dawn Remaster is one of the rare remasters that they allow an upgrade on that you can purchase mm-hmm. it ahead of time at the discount.
Yep.
Like before, you've had to wait till the day of, and then it was at the right price. So now you can preload it. So there you go. But yeah, thank you all for tuning in. I hope you have a good week ahead. We will see you all next time. Have a good one.